Welcome to Walk the Talk with me, Dave Thomas. Thank you for downloading this edition of the programme. I do hope you enjoy it. Lynn Wilkins has spent most of her career in public relations before going into recruitment. It was a chance meeting that led her down the path into becoming a cognitive hypnotherapist, proven techniques that helped her through her own childbirth experiences. In this episode, we talk about the different therapies available, how to overcome stress and linking the unconscious mind to our everyday lives, and how it affects how we deal with situations. At the end of this podcast, Lynn goes through a 7-minute meditation tutorial, helping us to switch off and relax. So join us now in a very snowy Cambridgeshire. So you went from a life of public relations to being a cognitive hypnotherapist now. So just tell me a little bit about that.
Okay. Well, so for about 5 years, I used to work in PR. And then for 20 years, I worked in recruitment. And the last 12 years of that, I was recruiting PR professionals, which was good when it started. But towards the end of it, I got really fed up with it and was looking to do something else. And I'd always wondered about therapy because I'd used hypnotherapy when I was having my babies. Uh-huh. Well, the last two, the first one wasn't a great birth, so I wanted to try something different. Used hypnotherapy and had my second child with no pain relief whatsoever.
Wow.
And he was a 10.5 pound baby. So I knew hypnotherapy worked. And then later on, when I was going through a really bad patch in the end of my recruitment career, I used to sit in my meetings with my therapist and sit there thinking, I'd like to do this. Uh-huh. I'd like to do that. Because I've always liked working with people. Mm. Love solving problems, so it seemed to fit.
Yeah.
So I retrained in career coaching, first of all. Did that for a year. And then I retrained and also did hypnotherapy. So I do the two things now.
Okay.
And cognitive hypnotherapy is a bit different to traditional hypnotherapy. I didn't even know when I started that it was the same therapy that I'd used when I'd been seeing a therapist myself.
Okay.
She'd trained in the same thing.
Right.
It's just weird how that happened. Anyway, so cognitive hypnotherapy combines NLP and hypnotherapy.
So what's NLP?
Neuro-linguistic programming. Bit of a mouthful. And what that means is working with the way your mind is programmed, basically.
Right.
So you're looking at the neuro, which is the mind piece, the language, how you're communicating, which shows what's going on in your mind. And then the programming bit is just all that learned stuff and where it comes from. So in cognitive hypnotherapy, what we're doing is trying to help you unlearn what you've learned with your mind, because most of what we do is unconscious.
Yes.
So it's basically dehypnotizing you from your reality that you've created, basically.
Right.
And all our experience is created. It's not, you know, you will have a different experience in a situation than I will be, even though the same thing is going on.
Yes.
So it's how is your mind working with it and helping you to unprogram that.
Right. We were talking the other day about empathy and the difference between cognitive empathy and emotional empathy. And I was always under the impression that you couldn't teach somebody to be empathetic, but you can, apparently. So that was quite interesting. And that was between basically the head and the heart and how we program ourselves to be the people that we are, I suppose.
Yes, it is. And it's different from, people sometimes get it confused with cognitive behavioural therapy.
Right.
And that's quite different. Those therapists are looking to make things conscious.
Okay.
And deal with it in a conscious way, whereas I would go about it in the opposite way. I'd be looking straight to go to the unconscious. I mean, they both work for people, but, you know, to me, it makes sense at least to go for what we spend our time, most of our time doing, which is a bit worrying in a way.
Mm.
We spend most of our time going around on an automatic pilot. And it's the same thing you do when you drive somewhere that you're familiar with and you get there and think, oh, I haven't thought about any of this.
Mm.
You don't think about how you get dressed in the morning, do you? Just, you know, you don't have to think about that. Most of what we're doing is unconscious.
Right.
So if you can change things with your unconscious, why would you need to make that? Just makes sense to me.
Right. Well, that nicely brings us on to my next question, really. And people would be quite scared, really, I suppose, about the various therapies and treatments that are available, and the stigma, because I think we said earlier, didn't we? We mentioned the word therapy and people think, ooh.
Well, there are a lot of different talking therapies that people can do. And the word therapy for some people could be a bit scary. I suppose it brings up a picture of a psychoanalyst with, you know, somebody stretched out on a couch and talking about deepest thoughts and all the rest of it. And sometimes, you know, I do talk to people about their deepest thoughts, but it's a very natural way in, you know, what I do. It's, you know, like a it's a very conversational therapy.
Like we're doing now, really.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I'm trying to understand with people, asking about what's been going on for them, with how they're you know, not consciously making their problem, but, you know, what it's made up of, and understanding that. And when we can understand it, we can hopefully undo it. But other therapies, you know, will be similar. You know, most therapists will spend the first session just talking to you about what's been going on. It doesn't involve any horrendous, you know, usually, you know, deep sessions of sobbing and all the rest of it. Mm. You know, that's not most people's experience. You know, I have a lot of fun with clients in sessions too. You know, I have a lot of light bulb moments. So it can be a much nicer experience than you might be expecting. But there's all sorts of things. There's counselling, which is normally just, you know, talking about and coming to a better understanding about your problems. What I do, you know, it's more about not just talking about it, but how can we change this, given that it's been learned? How can we unlearn it? And the CBT route, which it can be a bit longer of a process for some people, but they work within a certain framework.
Yes.
But those are the main ones. Those are the main talking therapists, and a psychotherapy, of course, as well. And they do a lot of talking about, and you might be working with a psychotherapist for years on something, but, you know, a lot of people get a lot of results from that.
Yeah.
So it's a matter of also, I think, when you're thinking about therapy, talking to a number of people, understanding what they do, have a conversation with them on the phone and see what you think.
Right. So, I mean, how do you see your role then in what you do? Are you there to hold somebody's hand, or is it a lot more than that?
Oh, it's a lot more than that. It's working with them. I mean, my role is not to do therapy to somebody. It's to help them find their own way. I'm there to give them the tools. And sometimes we might be working on reframing something in the past, but for some people, it might be just giving them tools to use in the moment. It might be helping them with anxiety, learning to breathe in a different way. Very often it does mean reframing, because I'd much rather they had a permanent change that wasn't just fast, it lasted. So that's the way I normally work.
Okay. Police officers, fire personnel, ambulance crews and other emergency service workers see things throughout their career that perhaps they cannot be unseen. So it's a common theme to process those experiences as being normal in order to cope. So how can we stop ourselves doing that, and how do we recognise colleagues that are struggling to deal with those experiences?
Well, I think different people will deal with it in different ways. Now, I was saying about the different realities that people have. I mean, your reality comes from different things. It might, first of all, come from your senses. It might be from all the learnings you've had across your life, whether that's from childhood or culture. And everybody will make their own sense of things and deal with it in their own way. So what I'm doing when I'm working with clients is to find how they make sense of their world and how have they made up that world. And if dealing with normalising it works, it's not a problem. It's when it's not normal anymore. Like we were talking last night, weren't we, about how you'd felt things had become unconscious a bit for you. You weren't conscious of what you're doing anymore sometimes.
A bit blasé, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. So that might be a problem for somebody. But equally, some people might be normal most of the time. They might have flashbacks.
Yes.
You know, or they might think it's normal and then something will happen and then a memory will come back. And then it will be a problem.
Yes.
Lots of people have anxiety, you know, in certain situations, not all situations. It might be in lifts or it might be in crowds, all sorts of things. So, you know, it's tuning into your feelings, and that's really how our body makes sense of the world.
Yeah. Certainly the biggest problem in the police at the moment is that people aren't having time to do that. So they're going from one job to another job, and that they're seeing, you know, they're seeing some awful things, and they're not having time to process it.
All right. Well, that might come out, you know, in different ways. And time distortion is something that most people will do. And it's one of the main ways that I will use in my hypnotherapy recordings for people, is to use that time distortion in a different way. And I was saying, you use how people's mind work. Most people's mind will work with time distortion. Time is not, you know, a steady concept. In some situations, you know, when you're really bored, time really drags. When you're really busy, it goes, you know, really, really fast. So we might use that. You know, how useful would it be for weight loss for somebody to notice time getting longer from the last meal they had? I'm not sure how that works in that situation you described. But I think one of the best ways to give yourself a little mental holiday is perhaps something like meditation. You know, so that you're taking stock, or it might be going out for a walk. There will be some situations when you've been through something very stressful, to take time out to feed your mind in a different way, to give it a break.
Mm.
You know, even if it's only 5 minutes, I mean, there's a fantastic app you can buy called Headspace.
Mm.
You can meditate for 10 minutes. You don't need to sit on a cushion in a room for hours on end, you know, chanting. You can just take 10 minutes out. And for police professionals, that might be a great thing to do. You know, even in the car, just before you go on your beat or whatever you call it, just take 10 minutes out, listen to this Headspace app and tune out for a bit.
Uh-huh.
And just give your mind a rest, because even though you might not think you're processing it, it's there somewhere in your head. Perhaps, you know, like, and that sometimes comes out when you're waking up in the night.
Mm.
And
but, I mean, that can be a problem for people as well, busy people, that and depending on sort of personality you are, you can overthink a problem. Or if you're just generally busy day to day, then, you know, it's quite difficult to stop the mind thinking, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a problem for a lot of clients. I was working with a software programmer recently, and she was having problems getting her mind in the right place to do that. And meditation really, really, really helped her just switch off for a bit. And creative people, it's proven that when they're at their best is when they're not trying to be creative. People who write, you know, they'll have their best ideas when they're in the shower or when they're out walking. So taking a little break for your mind is really, really important. And when you're really focusing on something, you can, you know, you get locked into it.
Yes.
and cycles of thinking, and it's, you know, it's giving your mind the same care and attention that you give your patrol car. Mm. You know, we spend an awful lot of time maintaining cars. We don't generally do the same for our mind, and it's really, really important.
Yes.
And also to recognise the signs, you know, and everybody has them. You know, for me, my shoulders will be up around my ears sometimes. You know, I used to notice that working in London, how, you know, I live in a village now, and in the village, my shoulders are normally down. When I'm in London, they'll be up and I'll be tense.
So what are, obviously, dealing with clients every day, what are some of the other common signs that you see when people are exhibiting stress and...
Oh, some people might be twitchy, some people it will show up in habits, you know, all sorts of addictions that we have. And addiction sounds a scary word, but actually we all have addictions.
Mm.
And it's anything that you do that you know is going to have a negative effect, but you're still doing it.
Mm.
So for me, it might be procrastinating. I'm a great procrastinator. Yeah. For some people, it might be drinking too many cups of tea, for example. Uh-huh. They're just habits that you get into.
Yeah.
And whether it's an addiction or whether it's a dependency, and a dependency is slightly different. That's when you're moving away. You're doing something to move away.
Yes.
And for some people, that might be a chocolate bar or whatever. But it, you know, doesn't really solve the reason why you're doing it in the first place.
Well, that sort of neatly brings us on to... problem a lot of police officers have, and that is with sleep.
Yeah.
And looking after themselves both emotionally and physically. So what are some of the things we can do to try and get a better night's sleep?
Oh, well, it would be lots of things, lots of simple tips that you probably know, like not drinking too much tea and coffee, anything caffeinated 4 hours before you go to bed. Don't look at your phone for an hour at least before you go to bed. That blue light is lethal to sleep, because you're on, you know, your brain gets the impression that it's daylight still and switches back onto its daylight rhythm. Telling yourself, not putting too much pressure on yourself to sleep, that's a big problem for a lot of people. And learning, you know, for through the day, how to relax a bit more so that you're not going to bed. And you can do simple things like, you know, if you are really worrying about something, write down all your worries on a piece of paper before you ever get near the bed, and just realise the ones that you can do something about. You cross out the ones that you can't do anything about and try and put them away. But that's a very conscious thing. So the unconscious side is much more important, which, you know, I've worked with somebody with insomnia last year, and we worked out where his mind was making sense of his problems at the moment. And once we reframed those, his sleep improved massively, and he went back to sleeping through the night. So for him, it was just anxiety about what was going on in his work life.
Mm.
Sometimes you need to work on those things, because they'll still be there tucked away in your unconscious, coming out to play at night.
Mm.
So the meditation again is fantastic. Wiggling your toes, that sometimes works for some people. Those kind of meditations or just visualizations you do with your body, going through from head to foot, whichever way, and tensing the muscles, relaxing them. Yeah. Just that thing that people do at the end of a yoga session. It's not called the corpse pose for nothing. It's really good. for learning how to relax. And Headspace, the app, they have a fantastic sleep meditation. All sorts of things. Get up for a while and do something really boring and then go back to bed. And sometimes it's a matter of accepting you're getting older and sleeping through the night may not be, you know, may not be natural for you anymore. And if you're going through something like the menopause, ladies, well, it wouldn't be men anyway, but ladies, the menopause, you know, working out what's going on with your hormones sometimes and doing something about that. Mm. And there are all sorts of people that offer advice on menopause now, because it's becoming talked about, which is a good thing.
Yes.
Yeah, a lot of men particularly don't understand.
And it doesn't just affect the lady in the relationship, does it? It's a thing that affects the whole family, potentially.
It does. It has with me. And I think, you know, it just explaining and talking about it so people understand it's not you, it's hormones.
Yes.
But there are things that you can do as well to do that. And it's similar kind of things about relaxing and looking after yourself, basically. Mm. And sometimes a bit of acceptance that this is a new normal for a while. And there are things you can do with bioidentical hormone creams and all sorts. You don't have to go and have the extreme kind of estrogen replacement from your doctor. There are lots of other things that help. Giving up caffeine is a big one for menopause.
Right.
Helps massively, yeah.
Well, I didn't know that. Finally, peer support is starting to take off within most of the police forces across the country. It's not so much about giving advice, but simply listening. So how can we become better listeners so that we can support each other?
I think just notice what's going on with your colleagues. And if you're noticing behaviour which is slightly out of character, just ask them if they're okay, you know, and don't hide things. If you're aware that you're behaving a bit more, and the standard, you know, I do it with every client, outcome measures that your GP gives you for depression and anxiety, the kind of things, do you notice your colleagues eating slightly more than normal, or are they a bit more lethargic, or you just notice those little changes about them, maybe they're more twitchy, you know, and ask them, you know, are they okay? Doesn't have to be, you know, if they don't want to talk about it, fine, but actually just noticing your colleagues, what's going on, and encouraging them to talk about it. It doesn't have to be a deep conversation. It could just be a chat over a coffee, you know. How are you getting on? Noticing, you know, whatever you've noticed, just wondering if you're okay.
Yeah. And I think part of the stigma is not only for the person sharing the problems, but it's also a stigma for people feel reluctant to ask people if they're okay. It's a very macho sort of environment within the emergency services.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, what I've explained to my boys, you know, I've got two boys, and, you know, talking about feelings is really, really important, because how you're feeling is how your body communicates what's going on in your mind. And with things like stress, you know, that recognising those feelings, first of all, and it comes out in your behaviour in all sorts of different ways. But talking is just the best thing possible. Also recognising, starting to recognise what might be going on in you that is slightly out of character for you, and not being scared to ask for help or go and see somebody or go and talk to somebody, whoever that might be for you. It might be a relative, it might be a colleague, whoever you feel comfortable with you, and just listen. You don't listen to, and sometimes it is just listening. It's not actually saying anything, or it might be just a rub on the shoulders. With my boys, you know, always just try and say to them, it's stronger to talk than actually is not to talk about it. And I'd be really upset if I didn't know what was going on, more than if, you know, they told me something dreadful.
Yes.
I mean, you can never not love somebody once they've told you whatever's going on for them.
Yes.
You might not like it sometimes if it's your kids, but, you know, it's important to know what's going on.
And it's as much in the home as in the workplace, it's creating that environment where people can feel that it's okay to talk.
Yeah, well, I had it when I was employing somebody. I had my old business, a recruitment business, and one of my staff told me that she was really depressed, and she was going home every night and crying. In the office, she was fine. And I had a really good conversation. I didn't know much about mental health then, and it scared me to start with when she told me, but actually it was really good to find out how to help her. I looked into it, and asking her what worked for her. What worked for her wasn't sympathy. She didn't want that. What she wanted was to not ask her how she was, So for some people, actually, you need to tune into what helps them.
Yes.
And for her, it was, you know, she needed, I said, we agreed that if she was having a really bad day, she just needed to call me and tell me.
Yes.
And I would, you know, and we actually paid for some therapy for her as well, which helped her. But just to tune into what she needed. And it was, you know, she was very grateful. Mm. So, you know, that helped, and she came through it. And for her, it was a temporary thing. She revealed to me that she suffers from seasonal affective disorder. You know, when in the winter she gets, you know, she's more liable to get depressed. Mm. So she got a light. So I said she needed to be at home with a light for a morning. Then that was fine. I'd rather have a good employee mentally as well as she can be than you know, have somebody who was unhappy at work.
Yeah. I think that's a point that a lot of employers miss, is that if they don't look after their staff, then ultimately it's their business that suffers.
Yeah, it is. It's all about meeting needs, and that's one of the greatest things I learned as an employer, that when you meet people's needs as far as you can, then they're going to be much happier and they'll work better for you. They'll be more productive and you'll have a happier working environment. So if you're noticing people, if you're aware that your needs aren't being met, that's something that, you know, is good to talk about with your employer. You know, people have all sorts of emotional needs, and they're as important as their physical needs. So need for privacy, need for autonomy, need for recognition, all those things, you know, there's loads of them. They're really, really important. And I worry sometimes things like open plan offices, they don't really meet people's needs for privacy very often. You know?
Well, it's interesting to say that, because a lot of businesses are going now towards open plan, certainly the police force, where there's been criticisms in the past of that closed door policy, that like your supervisors and bosses are always in their office, you never see them.
Yeah.
So we've sort of gone more towards an open plan.
Yeah.
Office now to get them out of the office.
Somewhere that's good, and you'll have sometimes better, you know, communication in teams. But having a room where somebody can go just for 5 minutes to get some headspace is really, really important. And I know when I was working in an office in London, there were days I would have just killed for an hour of peace and quiet somewhere. But that's me. I'm an introvert. I get my energy from being away from people sometimes, rather than with lots of people. I need a mix. And for a lot of introverts, working in an open plan office is hell, because they don't get their energy from being around people.
Yes.
So that's something a lot of workplaces could do, is to tune into the differences that people have in their needs to look after their mental health.
Mm. I know you're going to do a short meditation tutorial now, so it's over to you.
Hello, this is Lynn Wilkins from iEnableU. Here to talk you through a really great way to manage stressful feelings. And the more you practice this, the better. At least once a day if you can. And it's called 7-11 breathing. And the reason for that will become apparent a bit later. And no one even has to know that you're doing this. You can do this technique while you're on the tube, while you're sitting at your desk, or perhaps at night before you go to sleep. And once you know how to do this, you might find more and more opportunities to use this when you notice a stressful feeling starting. That moment you get an inkling you're starting to feel stressed about something. And we all have different ways we might notice this starting. For me, it's often tightness in my shoulders. For others, it could be knots or butterflies in their stomach. And some people might notice their heart start to pound. Whatever it is, this is a great way to tone that feeling down when you want to and feel more relaxed. So first of all, please only do this where it's safe to do so, which means not when you're driving or not when you're operating machinery, obviously. In fact, any time or place where you really need to be concentrating on something else. So just settle yourself down and make yourself comfortable wherever you are. And start to be aware of where you are, the weight of your body where you're resting. And if you can, put your hands gently on your tummy so you can start to notice how far your breath might travel when you breathe in. And that can help you to relax even more. And don't worry if you're not somewhere where that's appropriate. So just start to become aware of your breath now. Starting to notice the breath as it comes in and out. And how this happens naturally and easily. And because you can do this, you could start to notice how you can begin to relax and soften your shoulders down as you do this. Breathing in gently through your nose if you can, and out easily through your nose too if you can. And don't worry if you can't do that for now, just breathe in however you're comfortable and breathe out how you're comfortable. And just starting to relax and soften any tension with your breath, any tension you notice as you do this, because there's nothing for you to do now. Just to accept the breath in and the breath out. And what I'd like you to do now in a moment, when you're ready, is to take a gentle breath in and just count yourself in your head how many counts that takes you. Just take a natural and normal breath in now and count along how long it takes you. So just do that now. Okay. So now you're aware of your breath and the count, how long that took you. And in a moment, I'd like you to breathe in as you did before for the same count of whatever that was. And then breathe out for four more counts than you breathed in. And if you can't breathe out for four more counts than you breathed in, then please don't worry. Just do what you can. So long as you're breathing out for slightly longer than you breathed in, that's fine. So let's just try that now. Breathe in for your count. And gently out again for four more counts than you breathed in. And again, breathe in for your count. And gently out again for four more counts than you breathed in. And some people will breathe in for five and out for nine. For others, it could be in for seven and out for 11. And that's where the name comes from. It doesn't matter really. Just use the combination of breathing more out than in that feels comfortable for you. We're all different, but what you can do is try and make it slow and easy and as gentle as you can. That's how you'll get the most out of it. So just try that again now. Breathe in for your count, whether that's seven or five. And then out again for 11 or nine, or whatever number feels right for you. And each time you do this, your body gets a message that everything's okay. Because breathing out is the way our body knows that we're relaxed. And it will know that it's okay to relax because whatever was bothering you when you breathed in doesn't have to do that now. You're here and it's okay. And if you're somewhere where you can do this, you could also make sure you're breathing in right into your hands on your tummy, using all that space, gently expanding your tummy out. That's even better. When you do that, you're making sure you're making all of your lung capacity for your breath. And the more you do that, the greater the space your body has to relax and to use all of that relaxing feeling. And if you want to, try taking the breath in through your nose and out through your nose, as that can be even more calming. So just continue to do that, breathing out for longer than you breathe in, and do that for 10 or 20 times when you're practicing. So counting in for 7 and out for 11 or in for 5 and out for 9, or whatever numbers feel right for you. That's all you need to do to help your body understand that it's time to relax. So I really hope that was useful and you enjoyed relaxing with your breath. And before I go, please go ahead and share the link where you found this recording with other people so they can learn how to do this wonderful 7-11 breathing technique too. And I'd love to hear from you how you got on with this. All my contact details are on my website, ienableyou-hypnotherapy.com.